Welcome to the Orientation for the Jurisprudence Examination audio podcast for pharmacists and pharmacy technicians in British Columbia. This orientation is supplemental to the Jurisprudence Examination Information Guide located on the College of Pharmacists of BC website. If you have not already viewed the guide, it is highly recommended that you do so before continuing on with this podcast. The guide can be found on the college website at www.bcpharmacists.org and by clicking on Legislation and Licensure. For the links to more specific resources, please know that these are sometimes character sensitive and lower and uppercase characters are needed. Pay close attention to this to ensure that you have the correct link. This podcast is approximately half an hour long. A written script, which is an exact transcript of this audio format, will also be available for download. The role of the College of Pharmacists of BC is to protect the public by ensuring that registrants provide safe and effective pharmacy care to help people achieve better health. In order to do this, registrants must know their ethical obligation as a healthcare professional and be able to know and interpret both federal and provincial legislation that impacts on current pharmacy practice in BC. The jurisprudence exam tests your knowledge and application of ethics and legislation related to pharmacy practice. Now on to the exam itself. The jurisprudence exam is a 3-hour exam. It consists of 150 questions which will be either true or false or multiple choice. The percentage of questions in each category of the legislation is listed on page 3 of the JE Information Guide. Bring pencils and eraser with you to the exam. Do not use pen. Once you have arrived, you will be given the examination along with a bubble sheet on which to record your answers. The answers you record on the bubble sheet will be considered your final answer. It is important that you manage your time wisely during the exam. You will be provided with the required drug schedules that you need to reference during the exam. The provided schedules are the only materials allowed to be used during the exam. On the exam, you'll be given both the brand name and generic name of the drug. The drug schedules will be provided to you during the exam in the following order. First, the provincial drug schedules and regulations without the definition or explanatory information for schedules 1, 1A, 2, 3, or 4. You will need to memorize these definitions for the exam. Second, the midwives regulation. Third, the definition of Schedule F drugs. Essentially, a Schedule F drug is equivalent to the BC Schedule 1 drug. Fourth, the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act schedules 1 to 8. This includes all narcotics, controlled drugs, and targeted drugs. This schedule is very confusing to use, as the schedule names under the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act differ from the actual schedule names in the regulations. It is included here for completeness only. It is not really useful during the exam. As long as you memorize what a narcotic drug is. The fifth schedule is the drug schedule to the benzodiazepines and other targeted substances regulations. It consists of Schedule 1 and 2. The sixth and last schedule is Schedule G to the Food and Drug Regulations, which includes Schedule Parts 1 to 3. This schedule is very important and useful to understand. Schedule Part 1 refers to your reportable controlled drugs. Part 2 is a listing of your non-reportable controlled drugs. Part 3 is a listing of the anabolic steroids. These schedules are all available on the college website. Log on at www.bcpharmacist.org, all lowercase. On the left-hand side, choose Legislation and Standards. The specific links to federal legislation, provincial legislation, or drug distribution can be accessed from this point. Now I'd like to cover information on the exam itself. The exam is based on commonly encountered practice situations that you may experience. Be prepared to answer any legislative questions that pertain to everyday practice of pharmacy. The specific areas of the provincial and federal legislation you should know are listed in the JE Information Guide. Remember, you will also be tested on ethical situations, so you need to refer to the online Code of Ethics and Conflict of Interest Standards tutorial or refer to the full documents available on the college website. The tutorial is available on the college website at www.bcpharmacists.org/news_events/events/news177.php, all in lowercase. Pay special attention to the Pharmacy Operations and Drug Scheduling Act, known as PODSA. The Pharmacy Operations and Drug Scheduling Act bylaws and the Community Pharmacy Standards of Practice. You will not be tested on the Hospital Pharmacy Standards of Practice. We will now take a moment to focus on the best way of using and interpreting the drug schedules for the examination. I will give you several examples to further clarify terminology, coding, interpretation, and usage. It is important to understand how to use the drug schedules and what the term exception means. An example of this are the drug schedule entries for the product Polymyxin B. The Schedule 1 entry for Polymyxin B reads Polymyxin B and its salts and derivatives, except for topical use or for local action in the oral cavity or nasal cavity. This means that Polymyxin B is usually a prescription, unless it is used topically or in oral or nasal cavities. You need to look further to see what other entries there are for Polymyxin B. You discover there is a Schedule 3 entry for Polymyxin ophthalmic. No drug schedule entry is made for any other topical, oral, or nasal preparation. This means that Polymyxin topical for the skin, oral, or nasal cavities is unscheduled. Unscheduled OTC products are not listed in our drug schedules. Never forget, if you are unable to find a drug in the provincial schedules, it means it is either an unscheduled product or it is a drug listed in the federal Controlled Drugs and Substances Act legislation. In general, narcotic and controlled drugs listed in the federal legislation are not in our BC schedules unless they are specific BC programs that address these drugs. One other reason why you may not be able to find a drug in our drug schedules is that it may be listed by a different name or classification. For example, prednisone is not listed per se in the provincial drug schedule. It is under adrenocortical hormones. Estrogen is not listed either because it is under provincial drug schedules under sex hormones. Chlorpheniramine and pseudoephedrine are also not on our drug schedules because they are unscheduled, over-the-counter, OTC products. Another example of an alternate listing is the entry for nicotine. Nicotine and its salts is listed as prescription only, except if provided as 4 milligrams per dose or 22 milligrams per daily patch or less. There is no other entry for nicotine listed. This means that any nicotine product in the exception category is unscheduled and may be sold from any retail outlet. It is a good idea to now take note of where to locate a drug on the various provincial or federal drug schedules if it does not appear in the schedule you first look at. This will help you save valuable time during the examination. I want to re-emphasize that the provincial drug schedules do not, in general, contain drugs listed in the Federal Controlled Drug and Substances Act, otherwise known as CDSA, unless they are included in a BC-specific program. For instance, the only narcotic and controlled drugs in the provincial controlled prescription program appear in the provincial schedules under Schedule 1A. It is also important to note that if a drug appears in a federal schedule and in a provincial drug schedule, you follow the rule that is most stringent. This is seen in the case of Schedule 1A drugs, where the provincial legislation is more strict than the federal legislation. Therefore, you must follow the provincial legislation. In most cases, you will find that our provincial legislation is more strict than the federal legislation. For example, Furanyl C1/2 is a verbal prescription narcotic federally, which means federally it can be dispensed based on a prescription given verbally, faxed, or over the telephone. However, provincially, it is a controlled prescription program drug, so prescriptions from BC practitioners must be on the controlled prescription program form. It cannot be taken verbally from a BC practitioner. Veterinary drugs have a little V beside the entry in the drug schedule. Products with this V can be sold without a prescription if they are in a form unsuitable for human use or if they are prepackaged manufactured products that state for veterinary use only in both English and French. These types of products need to be ordered from a veterinary drug wholesaler versus a pharmacy wholesaler. It is important to note that human drugs from regular prescription stock cannot be sold for use in animals unless you have a prescription from a veterinarian. Beyond the drug schedules, to prepare for the exam, you need to understand and commit to memory other information that will be tested on the exam. I will now go over some of these areas, stating what you should know and give some helpful examples and indicators of what to pay attention to as we review each topic. With a controlled prescription program, you will not be given the explanatory information or the list of drugs on the controlled prescription program. CPP drugs are listed under Schedule 1A of the provincial drug schedules. With respect to the duplicate controlled prescription program forms, remember, you can have more than one product on the CPP duplicate form. These duplicate CPP forms are void after 5 days if they are not presented to a pharmacy. They do not necessarily have to be filled within the 5 days, but they need to be presented to the pharmacy and logged onto the local pharmacy software system. The void after 5 days is calculated with day one being the next day after writing the prescription. So, for example, a prescription written on December 10th is valid until the end of the business day on December 15th. There is one important exception to this rule. The void after 5 days is calculated with day one being the next day after writing the prescription. So, for example, a prescription written on December 10th is valid until the end of the business day on December 15th. There is an important exception to this rule. If the start date is in the directions section of the prescription, the void after 5 days rule does not apply. Prescriptions written for long-term care and extended care facility patients do not require the use of a CPP form. A pharmacy servicing these patients may accept and fill prescriptions for CPP drugs on a regular prescription pad. The prescription regulation chart should be memorized thoroughly. It is important for you to know all the details, therefore memorize the description of each drug classification, the prescription requirements, refill rules, and sales record rules. You should know these extremely well. For example, let us look at the definition of a narcotic drug using the specifications mentioned. A narcotic drug is defined as a single entity narcotic, all narcotics for parenteral use, or any drug containing hydrocodone, methadone, oxycodone, and or pentazocine, even if it has two or more other ingredients in combination. A verbal prescription narcotic is defined as one narcotic drug plus two or more other non-narcotic, non-controlled drug ingredients. Narcotic drugs and verbal prescription narcotics can never be refilled, but they can be part-filled. And lastly, narcotic and controlled drugs can never be transferred, and targeted drugs can only be transferred once. The terms refill and part fill also need to be understood clearly. If the examination question states refill, it means refill. If the question states part fill, it means part fill. Do not confuse the terms. Know the difference between a refill and a part fill. This determines how you will read the prescription and dispense the drug. This is especially relevant for specific classes of drugs. Part fills are usually used for narcotics and controlled drugs and sometimes benzodiazepines. The physician has to write the full quantity and the pharmacist part fills the prescription based on the directions for use and interval given by the physician. You need to know how this relates to certain types of prescriptions such as verbal prescription narcotics and controlled drugs. You must know when you can take a verbal prescription and when you cannot. And if you are allowed to take a verbal, can you add refills to it? It is rules like these that need to be memorized directly from the prescription regulation chart. Other rules refer to the practice of adapting prescriptions. There are amendments to the Medication Management Adapting a Prescription Orientation Guide. Please make special note of these amendments. Know what can and cannot be adapted. Narcotic and controlled drugs can never be adapted. Also know which drugs cannot be adapted by renewing. For example, psychiatric medications cannot be adapted by renewing unless you are a pharmacist working in a multidisciplinary team. Psychiatric medications are defined as anything that affects the mind, like sleeping pills, anti-anxiety medications, and antidepressants. If you are working in a regular community pharmacy serving ambulatory patients, you are not allowed to adapt these drugs by renewing them. If required, you will have to do an emergency fill. I will now move on to the topic of interchangeable drugs. When you dispense an interchangeable drug, you are not adapting a prescription. The definition of an interchangeable drug is another drug that contains the same amount of the same active ingredients, possesses comparable pharmacokinetic properties, has the same clinically significant formulation characteristics, and is to be administered in the same way as the drug referred to in a prescription. Practically speaking, this means that a prescription for an immediate acting capsule or tablet can be interchanged for immediate acting liquid formulation of the drug if it contains the same amount of the same active ingredient. Some drugs will never be interchangeable, such as 5-ASA products. The different 5-ASA products absorb at different pH levels, therefore they have different pharmacokinetics and do not meet the definition of an interchangeable drug. The definition of an interchangeable drug is in the Health Professions Act under Part 2.2, Pharmacists. You should be familiar with all sections of Part 2.2. For example, HPA Section 25.91 and 25.92 also provide guidance for interchangeable drugs and the terms of a prescription. HPA Section 25.94 provides information about disclosure of personal health information. also be familiar with the duty to report registrant under HPA Section 32.2. Interchangeable drugs is also discussed in PODSA Bylaw Section 6 as follows. On the prescription, if the brand name is followed by the full manufacturer's name, or if the generic name is followed by the full manufacturer's name, it is non-interchangeable. For example, if a prescription is written as apohydrochlorothiazide 25 milligrams followed by Apotex, the product would be non-interchangeable. However, if the physician simply noted apohydrochlorothiazide 25 milligrams, the pharmacist may interchange the product. If no substitution is pre-printed on the physician's order pad, the pharmacist can ignore that notation because it is not valid unless the physician has initialed the notation. You must be familiar with the definition of a practitioner both federally and provincially. The Controlled Drugs and Substances Act states that narcotics, controlled drugs, and targeted drugs can only be ordered without restriction by three categories of practitioners: medical practitioners, dentists, and veterinarians. More recently, CDSA has authorized nurse practitioners, midwives, and podiatrists limited authority to prescribe some narcotics, controlled drugs, and benzodiazepines within their scope of practice. It is not up to pharmacists or pharmacy technicians to police other practitioners. Nurse practitioners, optometrists, and naturopaths can prescribe BC Schedule 1 drugs within their scope of practice. Their scope of practice is on the website of their licensing body under practice standards. It is important for all registrants to be familiar with the responsibilities of the pharmacy manager in the PODSA bylaws. It is the registrant's duty to report unsafe practice to the appropriate college. For example, if a doctor is overprescribing oxycodone, depending on the circumstances, it should be reported to the College of Physicians and Surgeons of BC. This is important because it concerns patient safety, and as a healthcare practitioner, you have an obligation to protect the public. Be familiar with professional practice policies and any ReadLinks articles that pertain to pharmacy practice. ReadLinks is the college's newsletter. The professional practice policies covers items such as hard copy filing, compounding, and emergency refills. For example, a pharmacy can sell a compounded product to another pharmacy, but not in large bulk quantities, because that is considered manufacturing. They have to sell it based on a current prescription and the anticipated refills, and there should be a contract in place between both pharmacies outlining their responsibilities. In regards to emergency refills and using professional judgment, a pharmacist may do an emergency fill of any prescription drug, including narcotics, if in their professional judgment it is clinically appropriate and is in the best interest of the patient. The pharmacist must document what they did and the rationale behind why they did it. The pharmacist must use his or her name in the practitioner field on PharmaNet. The regulations for filling out-of-province prescriptions must also be kept in mind during the exam. Although a pharmacist may dispense a prescription from a practitioner licensed in any province, the onus is on the pharmacist or the pharmacy technician to ensure the prescription is authentic. Drugs listed on the BC Controlled Prescription Program can be faxed from out-of-province practitioners authorized to prescribe these drugs. The other province does not use our CPP form, as they use their own prescription pads. Even though it is legal to fill prescriptions for out-of-province practitioners, such as nurse practitioners and optometrists, our BC PharmaNet system does not support these categories of out-of-province practitioners. The only way a BC pharmacist can fill the prescription is to do an emergency under his or her own ID and document the situation. Registrants cannot fill prescriptions for practitioners who are not licensed to practice in Canada. A prescription written by a U.S. physician is not valid. Prescriptions written by practitioners licensed in Canada can be transferred to and from other provinces, except for narcotic and controlled drugs and adapted prescriptions, which can never be transferred. Additionally, a benzodiazepine and targeted drug can only be transferred once in the lifetime of the prescription. Record retention. All records must be retained for 3 years. This includes invoices and patient consent forms. However, prescriptions must be retained for 3 years past the last possible activity. Since a prescription is valid for 1 year, except for birth control pills, which are valid for 2 years, a pharmacy must retain the prescriptions for either 1 year plus the standard 3 years, if birth control pills are inactivated after 12 months, or 2 years plus the standard 3 years. In BC, we do not follow the federal legislation that states prescriptions must be retained for 2 years. This is because our provincial legislation is more stringent. Registrants must always follow the most stringent legislation. HPA allows off-site storage of records if a contract is in place. Further to this, patient information and patient records are strictly confidential. Follow the rules outlined by the HPA Section 25.94. Memorize these rules, as it falls under ethical practice, which you will be tested on. Do not release patient information unless you have the patient's consent or the information is going to a practitioner for the purpose of monitoring drug use. You may, however, release information related to payment to a third-party payer. Ethically, you may not even release information to RCMP or local police unless they are investigating a forgery that has taken place, or if failure to do so may result in patient harm. It is best to refer them to the College of Pharmacists. If a forgery has occurred, you may give them a copy of the prescription or even give them the original prescription, and you may keep the copy for your own records. This concludes the orientation for the jurisprudence examination for the College of Pharmacists of BC. All materials mentioned should be reviewed thoroughly prior to the examination. Kindly also review actual exam procedure as mentioned in the first part of the podcast. Again, if you wish to review this information, this podcast is available as a transcript from the college website. Thank you.